Welcome to PCMC. I'm Mike Bongiorno. I'm joined today by my good friend and yours, Mr. Vin Forte. Vin, how are you?
I don't like that you're telling the entire audience that I'm their friend.
I'm so
I don't
sorry.
want people hitting me up afterwards and, you know, asking for money and...
Slide right into Vin's DMs. They're open and willing.
Yeah, open it. It's Pride Month. I'm open and willing, whatever you want.
Just somersault right into those DMs and just...
Yeah.
Send them all sorts of pics of anything you want, really.
Well, don't do that.
And hit them up on Venmo, ask them for money. Do you think...
yeah, hit up my LinkedIn now.
I'm always afraid that my girlfriend is going to be arrested for sex work. Because if we ever Venmo each other, like, you know how, like, you put, like, comments? I'll always put, like, for them buns.
Right.
But I'm basically saying that I'm paying her for them buns. You know, I don't want her to get caught.
So you're afraid the cops one day are gonna be like...
Yeah.
Why are all these transactions for dead ass?
Yeah, exactly. Somebody's selling dem titties and is going to Rikers Island now.
Yeah, Mr. Bongiorno, what is a shaboing boing?
Okay, I'm sorry. Vin, am I okay saying you're my friend? Or is that saying too much?
No, that's fine.
All right.
Imagine the podcast where someone comes on. It's like, is it okay if I can tell the people that you're my friend?
And they're like, no, do not.
No, this is a transactional podcast only.
So me and Vin are continuing our journey down
the Milky Way.
The historic halls of Star Trek.
Yeah.
We started by doing an episode on the original series and then did all the original series films. And I have to go. And the premise was that really Vin is a much bigger Star Trek fan. And I was sort of a cash fan.
Mm-hmm.
And I was seeing these things for the first time. I saw the series for the first time before we recorded on it. And I think I'd seen all of
a
the
couple
original
of the movies.
Films. Yeah. Yeah. Now,
the original series movies, none of the next.
I'm in some new territory. Next week, we're going to talk about Insurrection, and that's new territory for me. I had not seen that until just now. So at some point, we will go back and record on Next Gen. I just, it's one of those, you know how it is, folks. Like, I want to watch it, but it's also like when you look at a show and you see, like, it's got a lot of episodes. And it feels like a daunting task that you're like, do I begin that journey today? Do I take that first step today?
And then especially with Star Trek, when most of the fan base is like, oh no, the first season's not great.
Like, yeah, like that's so hard. People say that about Breaking Bad. And I'm like, well, how long do you want me to give a show?
Well, Breaking Bad, I think, is a little different because that's a style of TV that is like, they knew this was a 5-season plan.
Uh-huh.
So like, you have to go in knowing that it's almost like a long movie, and you wouldn't like walk out of a movie 20 minutes in unless you really hated it and it wasn't
right. But if you find the first 20 minutes not entertaining, it makes it difficult for you to want to keep watching. And everyone's like, no, yeah, just wait, it becomes the best show ever. And it's like, I believe you. I'm not saying you're wrong. I've only got so much time on this earth.
Well, that's like, I've been watching only the first episode has come out. But there's a new like mini series called Clipped on FX, and it's about the Donald Sterling situation from 10 years ago with the LA Clippers.
Wait, somebody's in that. Who's in
Ed
that?
Ed O'Neill is Donald Sterling.
Ed O'Neill,
and,
right.
And Lawrence Fishburne is Doc Rivers.
And, how is it so far?
Well, okay. The main thing is when people first heard the casting, those were the two names they announced first. And it was like, great. This is amazing.
Yeah.
And then literally everyone else, it's like they look nothing like the people they're supposed to look like.
Oh, really?
Like Steph Curry, like whoever's playing Steph Curry is like, people are like, oh, this is like a Mexican bootleg Steph Curry. Because like they just got some Mexican dude to play. And like Steph Curry's not Mexican. He's not
Okay.
like, like he just, there's a part where they kind of go back in time to the 90s. And it's one of those things where no, it's so bad that nobody looks like what they're supposed to look like, that characters actually announce who they are so
Right.
that you know who they are. Like there's a scene at like a party in the 90s, and some guy turns, some like random black guy turns around, and I know where he just goes like, yo, you know who I am? I'm Tupac Shakur. And it's like, well, could have fooled me. Like, thank you for telling
That,
me.
well, the only other thing you do is like you have a Mylar on a bottom third that says like
Right.
Tupac Shakur. That's hilarious.
But like that was a whole messy case, and like the fact that they're making a series out of it is just as delightful.
That is delightful. But you know what else is delightful? Star Trek First Contact.
Yeah, arguably, I was gonna say arguably, maybe inarguably the
Oh,
best
wow.
of the next gen movies.
Of the next gen pictures. I have
Yeah.
at this point not seen Nemesis. So I don't know. A Nemesis could be the best one.
Right, it could.
And I know a lot of
I,
people say that.
you know what? I will say, and not to get too ahead of ourselves, I am a Nemesis defender. There are things wrong with it, but I think it was just like the wrong movie at the wrong time. Like there was this big franchise fatigue,
Okay.
and I think people who saw it after that, sort of like in a vacuum or in a bubble, probably walked away being like, yeah, that wasn't the greatest thing in the world, but like, oh, it had some good action. Tom Hardy was really good. It was an interesting,
Right.
like the bigger ideas were kind of interesting, even if they didn't always like land. But like, I think it gets a little more hate than is warranted. I,
Well, we'll
again, not to
eventually
get
get
ahead of
there.
ourselves, I think Insurrection is definitely worse, but we'll get to that. We'll
Okay.
fucking get to you, Insurrection.
All right. So Star Trek First Contact came out in 1996. This is 2 years after Next Gen series ended. It's directed by Jonathan Frakes, who
Yeah.
plays, of course, Riker. The story's by Rick Berman, Ronald D. Moore, the screen. Oh, sorry, and Brannon
Brandon
Braga,
Braga.
and the screenplay's by Moore and Braga. It's composed by Jerry Goldsmith, and Jerry Goldsmith only other like Jerry Goldsmith composed the first film, the fifth film, and then this film, and then the next two films. So it's weird because I think Jerry Goldsmith is like super because of the main theme of the first movie, which then becomes the theme of the next gen series. I feel like people think of Jerry Goldsmith as like being there the whole time, but really isn't.
Right.
And if Wikipedia is to be believed, his son Joel Goldsmith also worked on this movie.
Yep.
Doing the music with him, but is not credited in the film. And the cinematographer for this film is Matthew F. Leonetti. I want you to remember all those names because this exact same crew also makes the next film, Insurrection. It's directed by Jonathan Frakes. It's the same music. It is the same cinematographer.
And I know
And it has a
exactly what,
bigger budget.
yes,
And
and we
somehow.
will, yeah, I was gonna say, should we reveal why that's important now, or should we leave people hanging?
Because this movie look Star Trek First Contact looks great, and that movie kind of
Yeah.
looks like shit, and I can't really figure out why.
Yeah, I, that's a big question.
Well, wait, we'll dive
We'll
into
answer
that
that
question
next,
next
yeah.
time. I like this movie a lot. I saw this movie in the theater. What's your history with this film?
I saw it in the theater, loved it. This was like right around my entree into Star Trek. So this was like perfect time. Like they were doing the movies. I was like 7 years old. So it's like
Wow.
I was watching the show in syndication, and then like I
Next
had
gen?
cousins, yes.
Okay.
And I also and also Voyager had just premiered around this time as well. And I was like kind of getting into Deep Space, like, because I had cousins who were into Star Trek. So like
Yeah.
that was sort of my that was like sort of my thing of like, oh, they're cool, and they're into this cool thing that I like. So let me get into this cool
That's
thing as
awesome.
well. And
You saw it in
yeah, and
the
yeah, and
Jim Baker
like
show.
Yeah, and yeah, this was like the first Star Trek movie I saw. And what a movie you see in the theater, because like you
It's
say,
great.
it's the biggest budgeted one so far.
Yeah.
And it still looks great today. Like a lot of the practical model effects and explosions, like it really pops off the screen.
The money is on the screen. Like a bad filmmaker wastes money and it's not on the screen. All the money's on the screen.
Right.
There's a shot early on of a Borg cube, and clearly the cube itself was a practical miniature, but there's a lot of shit around it, flying around it, that's CG. So it's a blending of practical and CG, and it looks so fucking good. Like,
Right.
it
Well,
looks great.
the big thing about this movie is that it's kind of like if you were in a room with fans and asked them like, "Hey, we're about to make a huge bit, like we're gonna make the definitive Star Trek movie from this generation of Star Trek. What do you want to see in it?" They covered all the bases. Like, well, we want the Borg to be the villains. Great. Great choice. We want a little, we can't have everyone involved, but like we want little nods to different pieces of the franchise. Oh, we want something we haven't seen before. Great. Well, let's center it around First Contact and the Vulcans. We
A big
want
part of the lore of the whole series.
like we want to do like a time travel plot. Great, we can do that. Even like stuff that you may not have picked up on as a casual fan, but like all the like because they do, this movie does cameos really well
I
because
know
their
there's a
cameo.
there. I did notice the cameo from, I guess, the doctor from Voyager. Is that a cameo? Yeah.
The
Robert
holographic
Picardo.
e the e yeah the EMH yeah he's in there, but also Lieutenant Barclay's in it. He's in the scene outside where he wants to meet Zefram Cochrane. Like it's all these little cameos
Interesting.
that still work even if you don't know what's going on. Like a big one is when Worf comes on board. At this time, Worf was on DS9,
Right.
and
In
when
the next couple of movies, they have to figure out ways to be like, Worf decided to
Increasingly
be in this
insane
movie.
ways for Worf to be in this movie, but this does it this does it the best of them because he's piloting the Defiant, which is like the main battleship on DS9. But if you don't know that, it still works because you can just be like, "Oh, Worf flew in on a ship that he was commanding and got hurt, and now he's on board the Enterprise." But if you let, but if you're a fan of DS9, it's like, "Oh shit, it's Worf on the Defiant."
So
Like.
Vin, I this is where I your knowledge comes in, because I have not seen any of DS9, and I've only seen a little, a basic smattering of Next Gen, and so I have questions for you, canon questions. I think this whole film works entirely on its own. I enjoyed it from top to bottom, but I did have some questions that I thought I would pose to you. So in some ways, this movie is like a sequel to the episode, or the two-part episode of the show, where Picard is turned into a Borg, right? Is that
Best of
Measure of
Both
a
Worlds.
Man?
No, that's Best of Both Worlds.
Best of Both Worlds. Okay. Was the Queen character in that show, or is she just?
No, they invented her for the movie.
She's great. I love. She's one of my favorite Star Trek villains, and
Yeah,
she's
she's great.
horny. I'm down for how horny she is.
Yeah, she shows back up. They use her in the finale of Voyager as well.
That's
They
awesome.
bring her back. But yeah, she's great. The original, there was a big debate about the Borg Queen at the time
Because it
because
kind of goes
people
against
were.
the whole hive idea.
Right, exactly. It goes against the whole hive, but they were like, "Well, if it's a hive, you could have a queen."
Like a bee, like bees.
Yeah. So I think most people don't. Most people are fine with there
I
being a
think
Borg
it's
queen.
good
It's like,
to put a face on it. And I think
and the
she's
fact that
like
she's seductive
the
and plays it that way, I think that's the way to have done it.
Davros. She's like the Davros of the Daleks, right? Like, she's the
Yeah.
Davros of the Borg. And the Borg, I think, to owe a healthy debt to the Cybermen from Doctor Who.
Right.
But I mean, there's a shot in the, I think, the YouTube channel Corridor Crew, the effect art direct, they actually did the shot from this movie where the Borg Queen's head, or like her bust, kind of like comes down from the ceiling and then like attaches
And
to a
gets
body, and
it.
then she moves over. For 1996, that's an incredible shot. And what a wild way to introduce a character.
Right, like you're just seeing, like, right, like we're just gonna show you her head and then plug it into a body, which tells you everything you need to know about the Borg, that they, you know, reuse body parts and modify them, and this is why they should be frightened. You know, this is why they're frightening.
This movie begins with Picard. I guess he's having like a nightmare. He's remembering when he was a Borg.
Yeah, because throughout the show, like, there's hints that he has like real bad PTSD over becoming a Borg, and he can still like kind of sense them.
And then they do a wake up in a dream, but you're still in a dream kind of jump scare where he wakes up. He's like, ah, that was a dream. And then he walks over to his bathroom and he looks in the mirror and then like some mechanical thing like pops out of his cheek.
Yeah.
And it's a pretty good jump scare to start this movie.
Oh yeah, because you think, yeah, because you're right. They do it really well where the movie opens and you get a flashback, kind of like to like they recreate him in the Borg cube, and you think they're gonna hit you with a gross scare because there's something about to drill into his eye, and then it cuts right before that, and you're like, oh, thank God they cut away from that, and then the thing pops out of his face, and it's like, oh shit.
You see it like touch his eye, which alone freaks
Yeah.
you out. And for someone who like, if you haven't seen the show, like that's enough that you're like, okay, I get the backstory. Let's talk about everybody in this movie. They were movie ready. Everybody's updated. You've
Oh, they
got
look great. Yeah.
Everybody's got these like well, Crusher has blonde hair now, looks great.
Geordi doesn't have his visor. They
No
finally gave
visor,
him
right?
eyes.
They've got these gray vests on. I love the way the bridge looks. It's kind of like rose gold in a way, and like
Yeah,
kind of, it's
the
got weird
new.
feng shui. Like it's
It's
not like the
perfectly.
show
Everything
where
is.
it's super spacious.
Yeah, everything is like perfectly updated for a movie budget.
And they all look like they've been hitting the gym.
Oh, yeah.
Wait, Jonathan Frakes is in good shape. Everybody's like they've come, they're ready to make a movie. And I like everything looks good. And then so one of the downfalls of this movie, because there are it's not I love I like this movie a lot, but it's not perfect, is it's uneasy attempts to kind of make Picard an action star.
Well, okay, so I'm glad you brought that up because that is probably, if there's one like major criticism from some fans, that's it. But I would argue that people only feel that way because in the other movies they try and make him the action star as well. Whereas this one, if we're looking at it just as this movie alone, it makes sense that he would be more like they have a good reason for him being more action star. Because he's got that PTSD from the Borg, you know, they're driving him crazy. They do put seeds in there, like when they're killing the Borg in the hallway, and he's and normally, because you can rehab people from becoming Borg,
Which is what happened to him, right?
you know, just what happened to him. But he's so caught up in the PTSD that he's like, no, you know, like make sure you kill them, like you'll be doing them a favor. Like he's got such bloodlust for like getting rid of the Borg threat
Yes,
that he that's blinding him.
I do like how off kilter he is in this movie. Like he's taking
Yeah.
it all very personal and he's like very pissed, which I like.
Right. And then he does get cut down to size by Alfre Woodward
Who's
at the
great?
end of the movie. Yeah, she's a great audience proxy.
I actually, one of the things I like about this, and this is unique, I think, for the films, is it's basically an adventure that takes place on the Enterprise. Like,
Yeah.
when you think about, like, in most of the other films, the Enterprise is there just as a vessel, as a way to get them to something. You're cutting between an A story and a B story, and you've got, the Zefram Cockrum and his like outpost of all those people, but really like it's a Borg's taking over the ship story, and a lot of the stories in the ship, which I liked a lot. It was unique for the films. This movie, I want to know what you think of this, okay? Because this is just my feeling watching it. It feels like in some ways, and the Picard action star kind of fits into this, but it's bigger than just that. It feels to me like this movie is trying to sell itself a little bit like, we're not your daddy's Star Trek, because you've got things like characters drinking and getting drunk. Rock and roll music, cursing, action scenes, self-referential like jokes like Borg sounds Swedish. There's a lot of like Data's gonna say a curse word now, kind of moments that I'm not saying necessarily bad, but it feels like when it went from TV screen to film screen, they were like, okay, guys, we gotta like this is the 90s. We gotta make Star Trek for the 90s. Like, put on your sunglasses, drink your Capri Suns. This is gonna get extreme. Do you
Well, I think
yeah.
I guess there's a little of that with the cursing, but I don't know,
It
like the
has a
stuff
vibe that
on.
I think, and I don't think it's bad necessarily, but like there's
No, I think it's a vibe that Star Trek does every once in a while.
yeah.
It's just if you're again, if you're coming into it as a casual fan and all you know are like sort of the big aesthetic tropes of Star Trek, I could see how you would think that. But if you look back to like the original series, even to some next gen as well, certainly they did this in the 90s. They did a couple episodes of Voyager like this where they went back in time. Same thing with Deep Space Nine. Like, there is a segment of Star Trek that every once in a while will go back to the past and sort of play dress up in either our modern times or times before. Like, Voyager did a whole episode where they went back to the then present 1995, but they were dressed like it was the fucking 80s, like they were in Miami Vice. And it was just like really goofy.
That's fun.
And like, obviously, the original series has gone back to like gangster times and like the 1920s. So like it's not unheard of.
So then from your perspective, do you feel like this film is just a perfect translation of the show, or do you feel like there is a difference, like there is an effort in some direction?
Well, I think I would stick to the point I had before, where if you asked fans like, what do you want to see in a big budget Star Trek movie? It's sort of like, okay, we're going to give you a little of this kind of Star Trek. We're going to give you a little of that kind of Star Trek. And if you had to come up with a way to seamlessly blend it all together, this is like one of the best ways they've been able to do that, because it all just feels so seamless. Like, they came up with the right plot at the right time with the right like beats to make it all happen. And that's why I think like it gets held up so well.
Yeah, and it unlike the previous film generations, it's not sort of riding on the coattails of the previous film series. Like it's this is like
No, there's no
fully,
baton. There's
yeah.
no like passing the baton. Like, this is just full on a next generation story.
Right.
And
And what,
again, like, yeah.
yeah.
No,
What
I
was
was
he
just gonna say,
saying
like,
in the, I'm sorry, you go on.
no. But I was just gonna say, like, even something like the holodeck, like, they find a way to incorporate
Yes,
like a
that's
good
true.
holodeck moment.
Yes, I agree. Yeah. That, 'cause you don't need that necessarily, but they make it work.
Yeah.
I was gonna, all right, let's go through the nav a little bit. So the Borg are, have begun assault on the Federation. Starfleet wants Picard to stay away from the conflict, and at first he kind of is okay with that, but then he disobeys orders, which is it's a Star Trek movie. You're gonna disobey orders to join the fight. On the Defiant, by the way, Adam Scott, a very young Adam Scott. We again, this is well, I won't belabor the point. I was gonna say this is like not your daddy's Star Trek, but we begin with like a pretty big multi-ship battle. Like when we have all those ships in the Borg cube, it's kind of like, whoa, we're not fucking around here. Like
Yeah, this is a movie.
this is big and exciting. The Borg, okay. Picard can hear the Borgs. He still has like a kind of connection to them. Worf decides, hey, I want to be in this movie, so he goes to the movie. Kind of like Borg ball shoots out of the Borg cube. And that ball thing goes back in time, and then they follow it, and they scan the Earth, and they say the Earth is entirely Borg. I get, which I didn't quite get, but is it that they went back and they assimilated
I
everybody
don't
in
think
the
they
past?
I don't right, like I don't like when they first scan, they're not back in time yet.
Okay.
So
So
they're scanning the Earth and they're like, oh shit,
that's the
like they
effect
went
that they
back
had.
and
That's why they went back in time.
that's why they followed
The
it. That's why
Borg,
they continued to follow it back in time so they could stop them from assimilating Earth.
The Borg Queen rented Terminator on VHS and it was like, oh, that's a
Yeah.
good idea. So they're like, let's follow them. They've created like an opening, a time portal, whatever. They're like, let's follow them back in time. They go back in time. We meet James Cromwell as Zefram Cochrane, and he is a wily old drunk. And we meet his friend, partner, possibly lover, Alfre Woodard as Lily. They're in this like outpost in Montana. I'm not totally sure. They say it's 10 years after World War III, and everything's kind of fucked up. But it looks like they're like kind of like a little colony.
Yeah.
Their clothes are, I can only describe them as old-timey futuristic. They're both
Yep.
futuristic and old-timey. James Cromwell, I think, adds such a flavor to this, especially because when you think of James Cromwell, he's an older gent, and you think of him as like a guy with gravitas. Whereas in this movie, he doesn't play that at all. He's so
Well, he doesn't even
loose-lined.
want to. He doesn't want to be Zefram Cochrane. Like he want,
Right.
because they have to tell him at a certain point. Like, listen, you got to continue this space flight because you're gonna make first contact with a with an alien race. And it and he's like, well, I'm just a drunk. I don't want to do this.
Right. The Borg want to stop the first contact, our first contact, Earth's first contact between humans and Vulcans. Before this, remind me, before this film came out, was it always canon that first contact was with Vulcans?
I don't think so.
Okay.
This definitely like solidified it because they use that moment several times in Enterprise
Yeah.
and then in like later, in later like canon stuff too. Like they refer back to that moment.
There's an episode of Lower Decks where they go to like a Zefram Cochrane museum slash theme park where like you could go on like a fake ride of his rocket. It's pretty fun.
Well, my favorite twist on that is in Enterprise, they do a mirror universe episode where they show that clip from the end of the movie where the spaceship comes down and the Vulcans
Yeah.
come out and they and the see at the end of this movie is they do the Vulcan salute
Yeah.
and Zefram Cochrane like doesn't really know what to do, so he just puts out
He's one of those people whose
he
fingers can't do it.
yeah, so he like
Oh.
kind of puts his hand by his side and then he pulls his hand out and just gives him a handshake. But in this Mirror Universe episode, they make it so he doesn't know how to do it, so he puts his hand in his pocket and then he pulls out a gun and shoots the Vulcans. And then like bum rushes the ship and they steal it.
Did they get James Cromwell for this? Or
No, they just used editing to
it's just that Conan O'Brien. Oh, he's got a gun. No.
the dog
Yeah.
rolling. Yeah, James Cromwell shoots a VHS of Hope Floats and
The ship that will make well it, the ship doesn't make first contact. Like in Star Trek lore, the prime directive is you can't make contact with a new planet and a new civilization if they don't have warp capabilities, because if they have warp capabilities, that one makes them able to travel across to other planets themselves, and also it means they've reached a certain level of
like
technology and
sophistication.
sophistication. Yeah. So Cromwell, Jeffrey Cochran, in his ship named the Phoenix, is he's gonna just take it for like a test flight, but he's gonna use warp
Yeah.
and I guess Vulcans nearby will s detect that and then come down. So that's why it's important. And it's his ship was a nuclear like missile that he turned into a ship, which I think is a cool thing. And all of the Enterprise crew, they're kind of like they're like walking through it like a museum. They're like, whoa, history. And like they're like touching things and
Yeah.
Picard's like, oh, I've seen this so many times in a museum. I've never been able to touch it before. And he has a nice little thing with Data, where Data's like, does touching something make you interpret it better? And he's like, yeah, it does. And Data touches it and he gives a diagnostic of exactly what it's made out of. Data's whole subplot in this is a continuing one, which is his wanting to be more human.
Yeah.
Which I think fits so well into what they do with the Queen. All right, so you've got Picard, he's on the ship. The Borg have taken over a part of the ship and they're continuing outward. Picard says, if you encounter Enterprise crew members who have been assimilated, don't hesitate to fire. Believe me, you'll be doing them a favor. He's unhinged. He's fucking murdering motherfuckers left and right.
He's like opening people up who are dead just to get like a fucking Borg chip inside
Yeah.
them.
Yeah. There's like a random red shirt that's like, Captain, help. And he's like, sure. And he just murders him. It's pretty fucked up. Zefram Cochrane's trying to fuck Troy, which is pretty fun. I think that's a fun scene. She's supposed, they've all split up to do different things. See, one thing with the original films is, in the original series, the characters are really not that fleshed out. You've got the big three, Bones, Spock, and Kirk, and they're pretty fleshed out. But the rest of the ensemble, they had to kind of be fleshed out and sort of more drawn over the series. Whereas Next Gen didn't have that problem because the show wrote them all very well. So it creates like a in this film, you don't have to do a lot of work establishing everybody and everything. Like all of these characters work and work together and have dynamics together, and it kind of makes the whole thing richer. It's not like part four where you're like, ugh, it's a fucking Chekhov scene. No offense to Chekhov, you know what I mean? But like you don't feel that with this. I like that whole scene in the bar because they're like they tell Troy, like, okay, we have to tell Zefram Cochrane like what's going on. Like, there's no other way to do this. Like, we have to just tell him the truth. And she's in the bar with him, and Riker comes in and she's like drunk, and she's like, I've been trying to I've spent the last hour trying to keep his hands off of me. Problematic. Cancel Zefram Cochrane. But it's pretty fun, it's pretty funny. We've got Lily, who's like the Alfre Woodard's character. She was beamed onto the ship and was in sick bay with Crusher, and they had to escape from some Borg, but she kind of veers off on her own and finds the captain. Data is captured, which starts his whole story with the Borg Queen. Lily reaches Picard. One big failure of the production design are those big Borg sort of static electricity panels that you see. Like, there's one behind Data. It
Oh,
looks
yeah, the
like
big green thing. I know, they
it
look like
looks
the things that you put your finger on and like the electricity. It
right.
looks like one of those 90s toys.
Yeah, it looks like they ran out of money and they were like, oh shit, let's just take over the Spencer's gifts for the rest of this movie. Riker, Troy, and Geordi explain the importance of first contact to Zefram. This is a moment that I could see people hating, but I actually liked. There's a titular moment that nobody asked for where Zefram Cochrane says to them, so you guys are all
They're on some kind of
astronauts
Star Trek.
and all on some kind of Star Trek. I don't hate it. I don't hate it. How do you feel about it?
I don't hate it either, because
Come
I
on.
mean they are on a Star Trek.
Yeah, it's not such a huge jump. Like that's a trick you can only pull once, and
And they
this is
did it.
it. This is it. Yeah, I don't hate it. This movie has a lot of trailer moments. And that's not necessarily a problem with this movie. That's indicative of the 1990s. In the 1990s, it was a big producer thing, a big screenwriter edict that your movie has to have trailer moments. And those moments could be things like explosions. They could be things like a funny joke or a wink or whatever. So, like, that's definitely like a trailer moment. Let's see. Picard sort of shows Lily that they're not on Earth, and he shows her like for lack of a better word, window. That's cool. It's always cool when you see people like in awe of something for the first time.
See, can we pause on this scene for a moment? Because
Please.
this is something that, big air quotes, thanks to Red Letter Media, and other people like them. And look, I think those reviews are funny, but a lot of people do more than just take them at face value. And now, like, a scene like that has become a big, people take it as like a legitimate gripe, where it's like, oh, what does that room do? So there's just this little room somewhere on the ship that just has a window that goes to nowhere and like one control panel. Who's watching that control panel? It's
Right.
like, hey, this is the kind of stuff in movies that people complain about that drives me mad.
Right.
Because it's like, that's not the point of that scene. The point of the scene is just there's a room somewhere where he can very quickly show her that they're not on Earth.
Yeah, you know, I'm glad you brought this up because I'm really kind of mixed, leaning towards negative about red letter media now.
Yeah.
I kind of fell for them with their original episode one video, which I still think is like an internet classic. I think it's
Oh,
important.
yeah.
It's important in the discourse of Star Wars, but then they just kept going and going, and then they did a lot of Star Trek, and I think like you said, I think there's a lot of straw man bullshit in it, like that. There's a lot of just
Yeah.
padding it out and just finding bullshit to be mad about. And that's the thing. It's and I know it's a character that they're doing, but it's like this whole idea of like I'm mad, like it just always seemed weird to me. And then also like a lot of YouTubers, like as they kept making more essays, their like narrative portions got bigger and bigger. So like I don't remember which one it was, if it was a Star Wars or Star Trek, but like one of them had like a subplot about like Mr. Plinkett, the narrator, kidnaps a woman.
Yeah.
And it's like, what the fuck is this? And now they don't really do Plinkett anymore, but they still do a lot of stuff. Like they do Half in the Bag, and I don't know. I find a lot of it reductive.
Yeah, it got very reductive, and a lot of that stuff, I don't even want to blame it on them per se, because again, like if you're watching that stuff in the right mindset, like it's funny because they're overanalyzing.
Right.
And like
But
that's where the
are they making that joke, or are we finding it funny because they're overanalyzing it?
I think, well, again, that's the point I was kind of getting to, where
Yeah.
like we can watch it back now and be like, oh, this is funny because they're hyper nerds that are like analyzing, oh, why would they, oh, the Enterprise is the only ship in range. Well, you know, I happen to know that if you mapped out the galaxy and went this far, like there should be other ships floating around here. It's like that's but there are going to be other people that watch that same scene and be like, yeah, they're right. That is a stupid thing.
Yeah.
And it's like, but you didn't think it was a stupid thing before they pointed it out,
Right.
which is the whole point. Because when you're watching a movie, like you're caught, if the movie's
That's
doing its
just
job, you're
movies.
caught up in it.
That's just movies. I mean, like, to me, the best example is and this is from the comedian Dana Gould. And he says, like, you know, Jaws is a perfect movie, but where's the Coast Guard?
Right.
But who cares? Like, why pull at that thread? It's
Yeah.
a Jaws is a perfect movie. Who cares where the Coast Guard is? Like, you know what I mean? Like, who gives a shit?
Right.
Yeah, like
Right.
this scene is for Picard to tell Lily, all right, let's get you up to date. I'm from the future. I'm not part of some faction, because originally she thinks he's like part of some
The
faction that they're
terrorist
warring
faction,
against.
yeah.
Yeah, you're not on Earth anymore. You're on a spaceship. Look at Earth, and it's all cool. She's a really great audience proxy.
Yeah. And then like there's yeah, and there's the great scene not long after where he doesn't want to blow up the ship,
Yes.
even though that's the easiest, you know, that's the thing that needs to happen.
Yeah.
And she's like, Jean-Luc, blow up the damn ship. And he's like, no,
Yeah.
no, and he like
He breaks his
breaks the
toys.
fucking day. He's like, you broke your toys.
That's a
He's
cool
like,
moment
oh,
too,
you
because Picard's obviously wrong and he's being emotional,
right.
and the rest of the crew is like, they don't really fight him on it. Well, they fight him a little bit, but then
But
they
they're like, well,
stop.
you're still the captain. Like,
Yeah, and then Crusher says, like, once he's decided something, it's hard to change his mind. And then Alfred Woodard's like, nah, I'm not having that. And she just walks in there and she fucking
yeah.
gives him the business,
And
and
then
she
that's when he
gets
makes
to
the
him.
turn.
Yeah. And they talk about Moby Dick, which is something that comes up a lot in Star Trek, because she refers
Yeah.
to him as Captain Ahab, which I think is makes sense in this movie. You know, he's got an irrational like hate. It's similar to the way Kirk felt about Klingons after they kill his son. Like an
Yes.
irrational hate where like none of his diplomatic abilities or intellect comes into play with when he's dealing with them, which is why they're such a good villain. Let's see. They see the holodeck and they're like, let's go have a little holodeck adventure. Picard geniusly, Picard's like, I need a weapon. I know, we'll do a holodeck film noir where I'll get a Tommy gun and
Yeah.
I'll turn off the switch in the holodeck that makes things fake, I guess. And the Tommy gun will really kill you with real Tommy gun bullets. All right, sure. But it's
Well, yeah, again,
ridiculous. He gets
that's
the.
another great beat where it's like we were saying before, do you need a holodeck scene in the movie for it to
No.
work? No, but like they found a really good way to do it. And
It's
again,
fun as
another scene
hell.
that people again, another scene is that people pick apart and go, oh, well, usually you wear clothes before you get in the holodeck. So, like, did they just project clothes over them? Like, yeah, they did.
Yeah, who
Whatever.
gives a shit? Who they did, yeah.
Like...
Who gives a shit? No, yeah, I mean, it works a lot better than in Generations where they're like on a pirate ship or whatever. Like,
Yeah.
it's
Like,
much
at
better
least they're
used.
doing stuff
You
here.
get they you get to have the two characters dress up really nice and look nice, and they dance.
Yeah.
It's nice.
And it's also a hat tip to. In the earlier seasons of Next Gen, they would do several. There were several episodes where Picard would do these like film noir, like detective novels
It
in the
also reminded me
holodeck. It
of
was
an
just kind of a
early.
throwback to that.
There's also an episode in the original series where they go back to like Gangland Chicago.
Yeah, and it's a
Or
whole planet that
no,
like
it's
read a
not. It's the
book.
future that is based on Gangland Chicago because
Yeah,
the book that
it
exists is a history of gangsters.
yeah.
Like it's like that. Like
So
it's
that became
fun.
their like Bible.
Yeah, there's Nicky the Nose, who's
Played
like
by the
this
dad from
Donna's
Donna's
dad
dad.
from That 70s Show, Don Stark.
Yeah, who's got a metal nose that he uses to light his
Yeah.
cigarettes with.
Picard uses the Tommy gun and kills a Borg, and like you said, he rips out his some kind of chip, and Alfre Woodard Lily looks and sees that she could see the Starfleet emblem, and she's like, that's one of
Yeah.
your people. And he's like, oh yeah, that was Ensign Lynch. Anyway, like he doesn't give a
Yeah.
shit. And she's like, okay, well that's weird. Geordi fucking says way too much to Zefram Cochrane. He's like, oh,
Yeah,
I want the
just basically
Zefram
scares
Cochrane
the
High
shit out of him.
School.
Yeah, Geordi just revealed. I know they have to tell him what's going on,
Yeah.
but Geordi like takes it way too far. He's like, you're right. He's like, yeah, I saw your statue. It's outside my high school that was
Yeah.
also named after you.
He goes, oh, I wish I could take a picture of you right now because in the future, right where you're standing is where there's a statue of you.
Yeah.
And you know, they've set up that Zefram Cochrane is an alcoholic. So he's
Yeah.
like sneaking away to like drink brown liquor. And but people are walking like fanboying around him, like are nervous about him and like want his like fucking autograph and shake his hand and shit. And he's just as drunk and he's like freaking out by it. So he runs away because he's too freaked out by it. The Borg are transforming. This is another cool thing that you don't need, but that goddamn, it's a cool thing to put in a Star Trek movie. Everything that goes on with the deflector
Yeah, when they
disc.
have to go outside on the deflector disc.
Yeah, they go for a little space walk. That's awesome.
Yeah, and then
That's
Worf shoots a boy. He's like, assimilate this.
trailer moment. Assimilate this. Yeah. That's so cool. Like, you don't need that, but it's pretty awesome.
Yeah.
And also, like, you know, there's no up and down in space. So they come out, but then they pull the camera out and you see they're actually like on the underside of the disc, but it doesn't matter. And they're
Yeah, they're just on
walking.
magnetic
Yeah. And it's
what do you
cool. Like it
do's.
gives you a sense of scale that you would never really have of like, this is what a person looks like standing on the outside of a. I mean, Star Wars doesn't do that until the very last one, The Rise of Skywalker. It's one of the only interesting things in that movie.
You know what I've noticed about First Contact that really makes it work is it is a very well-paced movie.
Yes, it
Scenes
is.
don't linger that long. Like it really just jumps from one thing and then we're in a hallway, but we're in a hallway for like a minute, and then like that's just because like we're getting to another thing. Like we're going from A to B
There's
to
no
C to
fat on the bone.
D. There's no fat. Like it
Yeah.
really just hums by. Like I've watched First Contact a million times, and every single time I like blink and I'm almost at the end of the movie already.
Right. Every scene is moving us forward in some way, or
Yes.
moving one part of the story forward. Let's see. Jordy freaks out Zefram. He runs away.
Then they basically just kidnap him
Yeah.
and put him
Riker's
on
like,
the
we don't
ship.
have time for this shit, and just stuns him. We meet the
And
Borg Queen, and the Borg Queen is like got Data all tied up. And they're an interesting thing because Data's whole thing is he has that emotion chip that he could turn on and off. He's interested in human life and what it would be like to be human. But she's coming from a perspective of like a cyborg who's part organic, but also like feels like they've given up on the organic. Like she says to Data, like, you're an android. You're so much better than a human. Like, why? What's so interesting about human? So they're coming from
So
two
she's
different
like intrigued
perspectives.
by him.
Yeah. She does that really cool thing where she does a skin graft and puts skin on his arm. And then in a very sexy moment, like blows on it. And you see the hairs, like he gets like goosebumps.
And Data basically like fucking
He
comes in his
jizzes.
pants.
He's
Like,
like,
yeah.
right. It's definitely a jizz joke because it ends by her going, "Was that good for you?"
Yeah.
Which is 90s for like the only thing. The next scene, you see Data smoking a cigarette. That would be the 90s thing of it. She says, "Are you familiar with the physical forms of pleasure?" Data basically says, "I have a dick and I can fuck."
Yeah, he's anatomically correct.
Yeah. Let's see. Yeah, assimilate this. Zefram has a good moment where he's in the ship with Riker and he's like, "You know why I built this ship? For money. I'm not some
Yeah.
visionary." And then Riker says, a great old quote, "Don't try to be a great man, just be a man and let history decide the rest." And then Zefram's like, "What asshole said that?"
It's like you.
He's like, "You 10 years from now." Which is it's cool because when they go up into space and Zefram sees Earth, you see the moment where he changes. Like
Yeah.
he does, organically become the person that they think he is, but that's not his intention. Let's see, Worf and Crusher trying to get Picard to suffer some script. Okay, we do that already. But this movie is the first time I ever heard the song "Magic Carpet Ride" by Steppenwolf.
Oh, really?
Yeah, and I will always think of this movie when I think of that song.
That's funny. That's like you may know immediately what movie, but what movie I associate Paul Simon's Kodachrome with?
Coneheads?
Yes.
Absolutely. Absolutely, I do. Me too.
Because again, like I was young. It was like the right age, seeing the movie and just being like, oh, this is a really good song. Now I'm never gonna th not think of like fucking
Yeah. I also
the
associate the song that they're
Coneheads.
singing in the car. What's the song they're singing in the car? I want to run away. Is that what they're singing?
Oh, yeah, why am I blanking on
His
the
daughter's like in the back with her friends and he's driving them.
it's a song by Soft Cell. I want to run away and the why am I blanking on the fucking name?
I don't know.
Give me
I'm wondering if I have
what?
the right song though, now that I'm thinking about it.
No, you do, 'cause I it reminded me like that's
One
definitely
day
it.
we'll do a Coneheads episode.
Yes, one day. Tainted Love, that's what
Tainted
I was thinking.
Love, yes.
Yes.
Yes. Anyway, at one point, before Lily convinces Picard that the right thing to do is to leave and self-destruct a ship, Worf is like, "This is a bad idea," and he's like, he basically calls Worf a coward, and that's
Yeah, and
when
then what?
Worf, yeah.
Yeah, well, I was like, if you were any other man, I would kill you where you stand. Like.
Yeah.
Then he does the thing with Lily, and then he comes back and he apologizes to
Right.
Worf.
They're gonna all leave, but before Picard gets on an escape pod, he hears Data calling to him. So he's like, "I'm gonna go save Data." So he goes and he finds where Data is. Data now has like half a human, half like a flesh face.
Yeah.
And I guess Data's playing like he's going along with her, but he's conning her. Because he's kind
Yeah,
of.
there's a part where Picard thinks he's going along with it, and then like Data shoots him a look where it's like, oh, he knows.
Right. Picard remembers the queen and that she wanted him to be like the king with her. I guess it's retconning what happened in the show. But he says, like, you didn't want another drone. You wanted my mind. You wanted me to help you bridge the gulf between human and cyborg. And now you're taking Data for that. Picard says he'll give himself up if she lets Data go. We're cutting back and forth. The Phoenix goes up, does warp speed. Data betrays the Queen by purposefully miscalculating shooting the Phoenix, because she tells Data, like, shoot down the Phoenix. I forget how this works, but, like, they're in engineering and there are these big, like, glass things that if you break them,
Yeah, there's like plasma coolant tanks where like you break
it'll kill
them
anything that's flesh, basically.
organic, yeah.
Yeah. This is where Picard as action hero John McClane is a little too much, because he's got on like a t-shirt, so he feels like John McClane, and he's like,
Right.
he
He's like
jumps up to
Yeah, he's
not
like he's doing
die.
the monkey bars kind of thing.
Yeah, he's swinging around. It's a bit much going on.
And then the ultimate thing that people get pissed at is when they come back down, all the organic matter is gone. That just leaves the metal Borg queen like head and neck,
Yeah.
and he picks it up and just snaps her fucking neck.
I'm for it. I'm
I'm
for
for it as well. It doesn't bother me, but I know some people are like,
it.
Picard would never do that. It's like, well, he did it, so
Yeah,
what
it
do you
doesn't
know?
mean anything really, because she doesn't exist. She's part of the collective. So it's not like
Right.
he really kills her by doing that. You could also argue that she's already kind of dead. He just sort of turns her off for good. I don't mind that moment. I also think that
Yeah.
looks really cool. The CGI of
It does.
her face melting is cool, and then the practical effect of just the silver spine, like, that looks really cool. The day is saved on the ship. Zefford Cobb comes down. The Vulcan ship comes down. It's this big, majestic science fiction moment. Zefford Cobb, before he walks to the Vulcans to greet them, he holds Lily's hand, which is a nice little moment. They do live long and prosper. He can't really do it, which is I think is a funny meta thing, because there are some people that just their anatomy, it's hard for them to do it.
Yeah.
Picard kisses Lily on the cheek. We'll get into this in the next episode too, why both of these movies flirt with the idea of Picard having a love interest the way they would always do with Kirk, but then don't ever really do it. He kisses Lily on the cheek, which is like, okay, I guess. It's a weird vibe. And then it ends
Well, I
with
think that's
Zefram.
more him being like more gentlemanly than I don't think he ever
Well, you're true, but in
had
the
a thing
next
for
movie,
Lily.
Insurrection,
Well, yeah, the next movie, that's a
it's
whole
egregious,
different.
because he's supposed to be
Yeah.
having a
He is.
relationship with
In the
her, and
next
they never
movie, he's
kiss.
literally, at the end of the next movie, not to jump ahead to the very end of the next movie, but there's a part where he's like, I've got 8 weeks of shore leave coming up. And it's like, what are you doing?
Right.
What are
Like,
you
at least
doing?
kiss them. But why won't they let them kiss? I mean, Kirk kissed everybody. It's weirdly chased, these movies.
Yeah.
It ends with Zephyr Khan doing shots with fucking Vulcans, which is
Yeah, that's
fun.
fun.
We haven't talked yet. The score is really good. Like, not the Jerry Goldsmith Star Trek quote unquote theme, but the score to this particular movie, I think, is really, really good. Right? It's got a sort of like it's got a nice, I don't know how to put it. I'm not a good music guy. You're more music person than me in terms
It's
of
very
being critical.
adventurous.
It's adventurous, but it's like it's got a warm kind of like wholesome feeling to it. It's good. It's like a good like emotional theme, I guess.
Yeah.
And that's First Contact, a good movie. One of the good ones. One of the good ones.
Yeah,
Definitely
one of the
better
best ones, I
than
would say.
some of the definitely better than the worst of the original cast movies. It's definitely better than like Search for Spock,
Oh,
for
yeah.
sure. It's definitely like top five of all Star Trek movies.
Yeah, I would even say top three.
Top
If you had
three.
to.
Okay.
Because
All
again,
right.
like, that's the one where, like, if you had one next generation movie and one shot to do it, like this is the one, and they did it and they knocked it out of the park.
Is there anything that you wish was in this movie or wasn't in this movie?
No, again, like, and
It
maybe this
doesn't.
is just It just does the thing. It set out to do something. It was a good idea for a story. Again, the pacing, I'm a sucker for good pacing.
Sure,
So
yeah.
if they, so like the fact that they made everything work and there was nothing that like lagged behind at all, like that makes it, for me, that's a great sign, because I'm no longer like sitting around wondering like, oh, well, there was that one scene where they could have been doing something else. Like, no, it doesn't give me that feeling of wondering what they could have done,
It's
because they
propulsive.
did everything
It's
that I wanted them to do.
almost like a, maybe this is an overstatement, it's almost like the J.J. Abrams Star Trek movies. Like, it just go, like, there's constant movement. It's constantly like we're going to the next, we're running, we're going. Like, the
Yeah.
story, like, it's not stopping necessarily, but it doesn't, but it's not a dumb movie by any means.
No, we'll get to some of the dumb movies.
Yes. Well, next week we're going to talk about the next movie in the series, Star Trek Insurrection. Vin, thank you so much for being here. Thank you for talking about Star Trek with
Yeah.
me. I hope you live long and prosper. We end every episode by saying,
Well, bye-bye.